Just a field with corn in it, except, of course, during the winter, when there were just pigeons and crows in it. The wind dropped. The corn still waved. They weren't the normal swells of the wind. They spread out from the centre of the field like ripples from a dropped stone. The air sizzled and was filled with an angry buzzing. Then, in the centre of the field, rustling as it bent, the young corn lay down in a circle. And in the sky, the bees swarmed and teemed, buzzing angrily. It was a few weeks to midsummer. The kingdom of Lancre dozed in the heat, which shimmered on the forests and the fields. Three dots appeared in the sky. After a while, they became identifiable as three female figures on broomsticks, flying in a manner reminiscent of the famous three-plaster flying ducks. Observe them closely. The first one, let us call her the leader, flies sitting bolt upright in defiance of air resistance and seems to be winning. She has features that would generally be described as striking or even handsome, but she couldn't be called beautiful, at least by anyone who didn't want their nose to grow by 3 feet. The second is dumpy and bandy-legged, with a face like an apple that's been left for too long and an expression of near-terminal good nature. She's playing a banjo, and until a better word comes to mind, singing. It is a song about a hedgehog. Unlike the broomstick belonging to the first figure, which is more or less unburdened, except for a sack or two, this one is overladen with things like fluffy purple toy donkeys, corkscrews in the shape of small boys urinating, bottles of wine in straw baskets, and other international cultural items. Nestling among them is the smelliest and most evil-minded cat in the world, currently asleep. The third, and definitely the last broomstick rider, is also the youngest. Unlike the other two, who dress like ravens, she wears bright, cheerful clothes which don't suit her now, and probably didn't even suit her 10 years ago. She travels with an air of vague, good-natured hopefulness. There are flowers in her hair, but they're wilting slightly, just like her. The three witches pass over the borders of Lancre, the kingdom, and very shortly afterwards over the town of Lancre itself. They begin their descent over the moorlands beyond, eventually touching down near a standing stone which happens to mark the boundaries of their territories. They're back, and everything's all right again. For about 5 minutes. There was a badger in the privy. Granny Weatherwax poked it with her broom until it got the message and lumbered off. Then she took down the key which hung on the nail beside the copy of last year's Almanac and Book of Days and walked up the path to her cottage. A whole winter away. There'd be a lot to do. Go and pick the goats up from Mr. Skindle, get the spiders out of the chimney, fish the frogs out of the well, and generally get back into the business of minding everyone's business for them, because there'd be no telling what business people would get up to without a witch around. But she could afford an hour with her feet up first. There was a robin's nest in the kettle, too. The birds had got in through a broken window pane. She carefully took the kettle outside and wedged it over the door so as to be safe from weasels, and boiled up some water in a saucepan. Then she wound up the clock. Witches didn't have much use for clocks, but she kept it for the tick. Well, mainly for the tick. It made a place seem lived in. It had belonged to her mother, who'd wound it up every day. It hadn't come as a surprise to her when her mother died, firstly because Esme Weatherwax was a witch, and witches have an insight into the future, and secondly, because she was already pretty experienced in medicine and knew the signs. So she'd had a chance to prepare herself, and hadn't cried at all until the day afterwards, when the clock stopped, right in the middle of the funeral lunch. She'd dropped a tray of ham rolls, and then had to go and sit by herself in the privy for a while, so that no one would see. Time to think about that sort of thing now. Time to think about the past. The clock ticked, the water boiled. Granny Weatherwax fished a bag of tea from the meagre luggage on her broomstick, and swilled out the teapot. The fire settled down. The clamminess of a room unlived in for months was gradually dispelled. The shadows lengthened. Time to think about the past. Witches have an insight into the future. The business she'd have to mind soon enough would be her own. And then she looked out of the window. Nanny Ogg balanced carefully on a stool and ran a finger along the top of the dresser. Then she inspected the finger. It was spotless. "Hmm," she said. "Seems to be moderately clean." The daughters-in-law shivered with relief. "So far," Nanny added. The three young women drew together in their mute terror. Her relationship with her daughters-in-law was the only stain on Nanny Ogg's otherwise amiable character. Sons-in-law were different. She could remember their names, even their birthdays, and they joined the family like overgrown chicks creeping under the wings of a broody bantam. And grandchildren were treasures, every one. But any woman incautious enough to marry an Og's son might as well resign herself to a